Sports.com.
Good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel, and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Deckers, makers of Uggs and Hokas, Pierre LaFon, Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines, Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years, Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter, and CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And we're here today with Kristen Sneddon, who is a candidate for the Santa Barbara City College. Excuse me, Santa Barbara City Council. Kristen and I have both been involved with Santa Barbara City College. And whenever I see three words together like Santa Barbara City, I say college, so I apologize.
No problem.
So welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So, you know, one of the things that I ask people who are running for office for the first time is, what are you going to do if you win?
I will proudly serve. But as it gets closer, that is occurring to me more and more. I mean, there's a really big difference between campaigning, and which is a really entirely different experience, and then actually doing the job. So I'll be happy when the campaigning part's over, and I'll be happy to do the job if it happens.
So yeah. I assume you haven't watched Channel 17 and the Tuesday meetings that go on from whatever to whatever, and everyone asks a bunch of stupid questions and you have to sit there?
I really like the questions. I really like going to the council meetings too. So, and I do watch them when I can't go. And I think that's sort of a key that it would be a good job for me, is because I really find all of that really interesting. And
well, that's great that you're willing to do it. And you actually have an interesting combination of attributes that make you very attractive. One is that you've been involved with Santa Barbara for years, and the other side is that you haven't been in office. So you bring the old and the new together, which is very different from what most candidates bring.
Yeah, I come from a totally different perspective, and which comes with some challenges, too. I mean, I wasn't aware of some of the processes before running, and I had to catch up really quickly on a lot of issues, but I think I'm there now. But yeah, I'm bringing a whole different perspective to the race, and hopefully to City Council. I don't think we've ever had someone who's a purely in the sciences before, and I have a lot of ties with education, too, and I think that's sort of a viewpoint that isn't so much represented on our City Council currently.
Well, science is that's your opinion, science. Right?
Yes, my very strong opinion that science is real.
Science is real. Okay, that's an interesting point.
Yeah.
So you actually have involved yourself in academia for a while. You're a college counselor.
I am.
And yes. Tell us about that.
Okay, so with that, I've always been involved in education. I put myself through college, and the way that I did that when I once I did go to UCLA, it was by tutoring. So I would, get off of work and come home at like 10:30 at night after tutoring other students in math and science, and then start my own homework. And so that started my involvement in other people's education. And then I just continued to tutor all the way through. It was just something that was gratifying in different ways. And as I continued to do that, then eventually I was getting a lot of work with people who had college counselors themselves. And then I would be the person who would be working through their essays with them, but also through their test prep. And so eventually I just thought of getting my own college counseling certificate and opening my own business, which has also been successful. So I meet with students. That's actually on hold right now while I'm campaigning and seeing what's going to happen with the next year. But meeting with students in their homes and really getting to know them. And I usually do their tutoring and their college and career counseling. I'll know them for 3 or 4 years sometimes, the same student that I'm sort of their everything educational for that time.
I had experience with college counseling when my kids were younger. I was a good writer, so I would help them and their friends with their applications. Uh-huh. And one of the kids was a very, very smart woman who was going to get in every place. And we were working on her compositions. And one of the schools, she wasn't really that interested. I said, okay, let's have fun with this application. And the essay was, who would you have lunch or dinner with, dead or alive? Who would you like to? And I said, let's say the college admissions head. And it was an hysterical, I thought it was one of the great essays of all times. It was the only school she didn't get into.
Interesting. She had a little too much fun with it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So that's why I have a great respect for college counselors also, because I didn't think that was going to make the grade.
On that note, I always say with parents that it's really difficult, but to try not to read your own child's essays, because if they know that they'll have that voice or that audience, it really shifts how they write and the risks they take. And it's a little better if they can be a little risky and try things out and maybe have a trusted colleague or someone else to read it. But it's very difficult for parents not to, but I think, and I didn't read my own daughter's, which was excruciating, not to read it, but I think it's just as an aside.
It's very hard, when, our parents today, start thinking about what college their kid's going to get into when they're in vitro.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's very difficult not to get involved, particularly if the parent is literate and, really wants to put their two cents in. And, sometimes it backfires because the voice is wrong.
Well, and it's gotten so difficult now. It's not like it used to be where if you knew where you sort of fell with your GPA and you knew a reasonable school you could get into. But now you may get into your reach school but not get into your backup school. It's just highly unpredictable what's going to happen, and it causes so much anxiety with parents and students, and it's just so much harder than it used to be.
And this show is about education, and just following up on that line, you also right now are a teacher at City College.
Yes.
And you teach...
I teach environmental geology, and I teach both lectures and labs. And part of what I love about geology is how hands-on it is. In our labs, we go on field trips all around Santa Barbara to the landfill, to the Carpentaria tar seeps, to the Leadbetter Point, and different places where we can see landslides or different features. And it really changes students and how they view their surroundings. And that's my favorite part about geology, is what it does to adjust some of our thinking about the world that we're moving through and living in.
Is the term environmental geology something that you would find in a southern red state?
So it's
something that's not politicized?
Well, I'm so glad you asked that. And I always say that on the first day of class, that environmental geology, I almost wish I had a different name. It's not about environmentalism at all. It's about the layer of the earth that humans have interaction with. So how we modify that layer of the earth and how that earth layer affects how we live. So it's landslides, mudslides, drought, earthquakes, it's volcanoes. It's not about, not at all about horticulture or about different environmental concerns that fall under sort of environmentalism.
One of our sponsors is CSU Channel Islands, and I was lucky enough to go with them a few weeks ago to Santa Rosa Island, where they have discovered 10 and 12,000-year-old remains of Chumash. And what they've discovered over the last 20 years, they brought back the original plant life, and they've gotten rid of cows and horses and weeds and predators that weren't supposed to be there. And they're finding all kinds of very interesting stuff, including going through the sediment. They're finding, really interesting historical things. And now it's a site for many schools all over the country to come and do work there.
Yes. Yeah.
It was actually very, very interesting. What do you think of teaching in City College? I did it for 12 years. I found it to be a challenge. Teaching, to me, turned out, after many years in business, I found teaching to be the most difficult thing.
Really?
Because I was under the impression that if you know how to do something, you can teach it. And it's like someone asks you the meaning of a word, and you know how to use it, but you don't really know the definition. So I found that when I started teaching, I really had to learn my subject a little bit more rigorously in order to be able to explain it.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. There's a higher standard of understanding before you teach a subject.
Right.
But I love it. I think it's I love the interaction with the students. I have a little over 100 students each semester that I'm interacting with, and really getting to change their perspectives on human interaction with the environment. And it is definitely challenging, how to convey information, but it brings in all the things that I really love to do. Like, I love drawing, talking, doing labs, going out in the field, and it's a really I don't know. I think the particular subject that I teach, I happen to really love. Although I've taught math before at Red Rocks Community College, and I loved that too. So I'm just, I think I just really like the classroom and the students.
What are the Election Commission rules on making your students vote for you?
You know, it's been a little tricky. I have not mentioned to my students that I'm running at all. I've been maybe overly cautious with making sure that I'm not doing anything influencing in any way. I mean, a student or two has said that they saw me in a newspaper or somewhere in an interview, and then I'll confirm it. Yes, I was there. But, you know, I have a large large sort of base of students who I think would be really supportive, but I'm just being very, very careful in that.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education. Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coramar Drive in Goleta.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Kristen Sneddon, a candidate for Santa Barbara City Council District 4, yes, and a professor at City College. See, I got both City College in and
you
City
got it.
Council, and I got that in the right order. So you been involved with Women's Economic Ventures.
Yes, I'm a graduate, yeah.
And I am a newly appointed mentor.
Oh, it's such a fantastic program.
Yeah.
When I initially went through that program, it was, it was probably 13, 14 years ago now, and it was to look into geophysical consulting. So we had moved back to town here, and I was trying to figure out if that's what I was going to do next, because I had been a researcher before at the USGS in Denver, and when we moved back here, there aren't really part-time research positions open, and Women's Economic Ventures was so fantastic to let me explore that option and gave me the tools that I needed and the network of meeting other people. It was such a great resource.
Well, since you brought it up, no, you didn't, I did. There's a breakfast at 8 o'clock Tuesday morning,
okay,
a fundraiser up at Fest Parkers, so if anyone's interested, it's 8 o'clock Tuesday morning.
Yes, it's a fantastic organization to support.
Yeah, and I got involved and I went to my first meeting last week, mm-hmm, and you know the kids, some of them are older than me, the participants are really motivated.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of it is because, as Freud said, therapy doesn't work unless you pay for it. And this is consulting that's, you know, very reasonable, but you have to pay to go. And so people tend to, I think, to take it more seriously.
I think so.
So you You teach, you're a college counselor,
yes.
You had a business, you're
yes.
a scientist. How did you become, you're a woman, how did you become a scientist? It must have been that must have been a real struggle for you. You know, math and...
You know, the struggle wasn't the subject matter. The struggle was all the people along the way who think that you shouldn't be doing that. I mean, why would you be interested in that? Or isn't that too hard? Or why are you wasting your time with that? But it's just the topic that I love and I just kept coming back to. And it did take me a little longer. And I had my kids when I was in graduate school. And there was definitely a professor who went to my husband and told him to, you know, I think you should take Kristen home and she shouldn't be here because I was pregnant and sitting at a desk and working. And, you know, they're just any woman in science, you will get multiple different stories about all of the little micro discouragements along the way. So I think it just, the ones who make it through, and I would encourage any young person listening or older person, anybody who's considered the sciences, just go for it and just hang in there and keep going. And there will always, always be people who tell you the multiple reasons why you shouldn't or couldn't or won't.
And I guess you're inspiring these kids, even if they're not listening in class, just standing there because of the women in the class.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. I think it's helpful for all students to see all different types of instructors to see that there isn't just one model for understanding and for success. Yeah.
So what's going to happen to these kids that love your class if you win? Have you thought about that? Do you feel
well,
guilty?
I'm adjunct, so I teach part-time. And right now I have 4 classes, so 1 lecture and 3 labs. And we have a lot of other fantastic instructors. But I'll keep at least 1 lecture because I think it keeps me fresh and knowledgeable, and I just think it's a really high impact on our community to be meeting with students, and I just love it so much. So I would keep teaching at least 1 class.
And you mentioned Denver. Were you took some time out off. You were born in Santa Barbara?
No, I was born in Alaska, raised in LA, and moved to Santa Barbara when I was 16.
And what made Santa Barbara more attractive than Alaska? I don't understand how you could move there.
It wasn't my choice. It was my mom. And then we moved here to town when she'd gotten married and we decided to, you know, start a new life in Santa Barbara. So it was actually really difficult to move here as a junior in high school after I'd had a whole life somewhere else and to come to Santa Barbara, which at that time was very... I don't know. Santa Barbarans, we really like our own, you know, our own people. And it was difficult. It was difficult to come and make new friends.
And one of the benefits of growing up in Alaska is you have very nice skin.
I didn't grow up in Alaska. I was just born there.
Oh, okay.
And then grew up in L.A.
Oh, okay.
I'll take the compliment.
You take the compliment.
Anyway.
So what inspired you to run? You seem to have a full plate. You don't need to run to keep busy.
It's true. I don't need to run to keep busy. But, you know, there was the... Oh, it starts with the November elections or presidential elections, and that one happened to be. I teach about a lot of things in class, but with environmental geology, there's always the doom and gloom part where you talk about all the risks, and then the next class will be about the mitigations, what you do, you know, to manage the risk. And so we had just done our climate change talk and all about the doom and gloom of climate change on a Monday, and then Tuesday night was the presidential election, and by Wednesday. I couldn't teach the same class that I had planned to teach about all the mitigations that would be in place. And I sort of changed the way I taught my class to be more about what is the EPA? What is the DOE? Does it matter who's in charge of them or not? And not leading to conclusions, but by providing a lot of different articles, different perspectives on that so the students could come to their own conclusions about how those agencies might run. So then came the March for Science, which was organized by City College students, in chemistry department, I believe. And it takes a lot to have a scientist march. And I went to the March for Science, and there's Susan Epstein, who's on the Goleta School Board, made sort of a general call.
Who's been a guest here.
Oh, she's so fantastic. Yeah. And she, you know, she was emceeing the event and said, you know, people with science backgrounds should consider running for local office. And it was really in that moment that I hadn't thought about having a science background as being a qualifier. But I just wanted to do more. And when I heard that, and she said she mentors people, and so I met with her and said, you know, how does this look? Should I be doing this in 4 years or 8 years? And she was just really encouraging that that I should look into it more and pursue it. And it kind of snowballed from there. But I'm very happy to be representing the sort of scientific perspective. I mean, like I say, it's the first time ever that I've had to, in class, teach science differently. I have to defend science, that it's real, defend the scientific method. It's really changed. And I think on a national level, when we have science organizations like NASA being headed by politicians, I think it's maybe time that we have some political positions being filled by scientists. Balance it out.
You seem to have such a good attitude. I get so frustrated when I hear, you know, students from good schools in the middle of the country say, you know, I go to classes, science classes, but I'm still skeptical.
I know. It's shocking. It's shocking, actually, to me. But I'm a person who takes action. Like, if I'm frustrated by that, then I'm going to just work harder in the classroom to be more convincing and to get that message out. But I share your concern. I mean, it depends what textbooks you have. It depends what teacher you have and what message is coming from the top down.
Does it make it easier to be a newcomer because Santa Barbara's elections are non-party driven? That is, you don't need to come through the party ranks. You can just say, I'm a candidate. Does that make it easier to enter?
Well, it's easier to enter, certainly, but there are still those who believe you do need to come up through the party ranks. And I didn't do that, and there's definitely some challenges associated with that. I hope I'm making up time for that, but it is a nonpartisan seat, and I think we need to, when we're looking at our city, really take into account all the considerations across party lines.
Yeah. Of course, not to embarrass you, but for someone who's not endorsed by the Democratic Party, every single person who's a Democrat in office is supporting you. So sort of the paradox of this year's election.
Yes, I do have strong support. I'm very proud. Yeah.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear. From humble beginnings in 1973, Santa Barbara has been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers' portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Kristen Sneddon, a candidate for Santa Barbara City Council. And I just read that AHA improves attitude and creates social harmony. And that's, you know, one of the things, and we're going to talk about your positions on so many issues. But, you know, to me, one of the most important issues that this country needs is a way of finding a way of creating social harmony. And, you know, here in Santa Barbara, we sometimes forget because we're pretty much on an island of our own sort of liberal beliefs. But around the country, it's pretty divisive.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the things that affect our city. And I guess, you know, the most publicized one is the State Street question. You know, what do we do about this avenue? As someone said, it's longer than Michigan Avenue, and it's not really designed for a shopping mall anymore. What do we do about it?
Well, you know, State Street's changed a lot over the years in different iterations. I mean, we used to have, people hear me talk about this, but Piccadilly Square was before Paseo Nuevo, and it was very controversial when Paseo Nuevo came on. And, you know, we just have cycles where it's changing. So it'll the look of retail, the retail spaces, the size of the spaces will change, and then the commerce that moves through those spaces. So sort of popular right now is shared workspaces or sort of customized experiences like having an art class while you're drinking your wine at the same time, or different types of massage, I guess, or different sort of experiences more, and that might require less space. So, you know, we may be done with the sort of larger box spaces, but if those can be segmented and then more local businesses and back to local artists or more customized and to what we actually have here.
Well, the other pressing concern is housing. So to me, it's a natural. I mean, well, you look, I'm from New York. You look at New York, one of the ways that there's been a renaissance in so many neighborhoods was to combine commercial and residential.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you had on the second to fourth floors residential, you'd have a environment that was 24/7, not just during business hours.
Yeah, and there's
or drinking hours.
Yeah, well, yeah, there you go, too. There's a lot of discussion about that. I'm open to it. I think that we'll have to really look at the whole community and see how people feel about that. I don't think we'll go to three or four stories, but there's certainly opportunities all throughout downtown to have mixed use and to bring life back to State Street when it's, you know, past closing hours. And I think that'd be great. Okay. A great use of the space there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we just met, so I'm not on your campaign committee.
No.
So, but let me talk for you.
Okay.
Okay. And to me, one of the selling points of someone like you is if you've already been there as a elected official, this has been going on for years.
Mm-hmm.
Since I've been here, it's been State Street is and housing has been the issue that and the vagrants and whatever. Why shouldn't we vote for someone new, even if you have exactly the same views as someone who's been here for 15 years? Why wouldn't we kind of coalesce around somebody new, because they had their chance and it didn't work?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on
that. Is that a good question?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, yeah, I just have an entirely different perspective. And I love our city council. And I think we have attorneys' perspective. We have small business owners on there. We have a lot of different perspectives. But we don't have my perspective. And we don't have the science perspective or the education perspective specifically. And I'm also a long-term resident. I mean, I graduated from high school here and have lived here as a struggling student, has lived here as a parent, as a professional, and I really like to bring that, all of those perspectives to being on city council. But I agree, why not? I mean, I'm a trustworthy person. I do have experience in managing budgets and pensions through being the chair of Peabody Charter School, which is an actual school board of a school district. So I don't know. I like your question. Yeah.
So what about public safety? That's one issue that when I came here, it wasn't an issue. I came here, one of the selling points 19 years ago was this is the safest place.
Mm-hmm.
And safety is not just a matter of, you know, being held up. It's also a matter of being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's difficult to feel that this is paradise if you walk down the street and you're harassed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, separate from the retail problems, what do you do if you're a compassionate place like Santa Barbara? What do you do about, and again, I'll say, let's split it between homeless and vagrants.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of ways to be homeless. And I think sometimes we lump together homelessness with mental health issues, and that's certainly one cause and way to be homeless. But we also have a lot of homeless youth. Much of City College students are homeless, which is sort of shocking and surprising, or living out of cars, or there are families that are living out of RVs that are, it's not a mental health issue, that just they're just barely hanging on and could go one way or the other. So so separating those out, whether you have sort of mental health issue homeless who really aren't being managed by any caseworker or getting the help or the resources that they need. I sort of have a a sort of new idea I've been exposed to, and they do this in Portland, where they have a crisis social worker, care worker, permanently stationed at the public library, so that not a long-term social worker, but someone who's interfacing really often with a homeless population and getting to know different people and then connecting them to the resources that are available. I mean, the county does provide a lot of resources. We just have the connection isn't made with a particular person on the street to the particular resources that could be helpful. So that could be one idea. I also think the police ambassadors program is moving toward connecting people to resources that they need, and also with the same idea of getting to know the people who are habitually living on State Street. So there's the mental health component of that. But then there are also sort of transition houses or different, you know, people aren't all on homeless for the same reasons. And I think we have to look at that. But there is definitely a more aggressive tone on State Street, which I just don't think it should be up to our first responders, our police and our fire, to manage that issue by themselves. I think we need to get people to different caseworkers or located to the actual resources that could help them specifically.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned Portland, not because I'm interested in Portland. In fact, it's one of the few places I've never been to. Mm-hmm. But everyone in Santa Barbara, because it's such a beautiful place, tends to say this is unique. And it is unique in many mm-hmm. ways. But you know, most things since Socrates and Plato have mm-hmm. already been said. And to look at other places and mm-hmm. see how they've done things is actually something that typically new people will do more likely than mm-hmm. old people, old mm-hmm. meaning people who've been around. And it's really important to say, yes, we are special. I would say that rather than unique, but how have other special places dealt with these similar problems? Mm-hmm. And to look at, you know, best practices, mm-hmm. because there are solutions to almost everything. In fact, I run every day at the beach, and I've noticed, I don't know whether it's my imagination or whether my eyesight's going, but the homeless vagrancy problem is much less. And I noticed mm-hmm. over the last few years, there have been counselors on the beach, mm-hmm. on the bike path, talking to people. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed it's significantly less less people who shouldn't be there bothering people. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether that's just, you know, the circumstance or whether it's because someone was doing something about it, but it's worth taking a look at because mm-hmm. it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
yeah. We also have the Doctors Without Walls yeah. and State Street State Clinics.
So you mentioned you have had experience with budgeting because you had a business. You also mm-hmm. are the chair of the Peabody School Board. How much trouble is Santa Barbara in fiscally?
Well, I mean, we're having a major shortfall from the state, and so our infrastructure is grossly underfunded, and we won't be able to maintain our streets at the level that we, or our infrastructure at the level that we expect. So the big one that comes up is the police station and people talking about that one. And that building is very outdated. It's not seismically sound. It has asbestos in it. It's crowded. It's in a natural disaster or earthquake, and it would not be a suitable hub to be protecting our city from. So financially, in terms of maintenance and in terms of infrastructure, I have to say if Measure C doesn't pass, then the city will have to look at some pretty extreme tough decisions to make about how to move that funding around.
What about unfunded pension?
Yeah, unfunded pension is a huge liability. Mm-hmm. And so there is pension reform. And so now it's a two-tiered system. And as time goes on, we may need to, so two-tiered so that older, long-time employees have a different pension plan than new hires. And, you know, they may have to look at that again as time goes. I mean the city is in the people business of that's who runs cities. And so we do need to take care of our really exceptional staff. And over time, making sure we have enough in there to fund the pensions.
Not to get overly political, but one of the things that is mind-boggling is that one of the proposals in the Tax Reform Act that the Trump administration has put forth is to disincentivize people to invest in their 401k plan and force them into Roth IRAs. Mm-hmm. Because Roth IRAs, you pay into it after-tax dollars, which is more money to the federal government over the short term. And that would disincentivize so many people who no longer have defined pensions, mm-hmm. which is the only safety net that they have. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're talking about, you know, because every city's got this problem.
Oh, yes, with pension, and schools, municipal, too.
And I mean, yet the federal government's working on another track that would really hurt people if, in fact, we, like everyone else, has to, you know, bifurcate the mm-hmm. pension system of municipal employees just to stay alive. It's mm-hmm. really something that hasn't really been that publicized. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For more than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers brand showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Kristen Sneddon, a candidate for Santa Barbara City Council District Number 4. So one of the good things, I guess, about running for city council, unlike running for mayor or governor, it doesn't require any money.
Oh, yes. I wish that were true. It's a little bit crazy how much money it does take. And we're talking about not a citywide election, but a district election, which is a, you know, much smaller area. And, you know, I know some of my opponents have $50,000 to $75,000, and that seems like a tremendous amount of money to spend in a district. And I have less than that, and I started later, and I'm doing as much as I can with what I have. I mean, I can always use donations, so if you're listening and you would like to donate, you can go to my website, sneddonforsantabarbara.com. But that's been one of the hardest things for me, because I just don't come from a background of following the money and asking for money. And it was just, I know it has to happen, and that a campaign could be really fantastic in every other way, but completely fizzle if you don't have enough money to get the word out, to get the message out for the mailers and for that kind of thing. But it's a lot of money that I feel like people donating could be donating it into programs for our city and our youth, and instead we're going to candidates, and it's just collectively, it's really a lot of money.
No, it's going to Key News, actually.
That's it.
And, you know, one of the things that used to drive me nuts is watching the news during the presidential election, which mm-hmm. also had a congressional race that was probably the most expensive. Was everyone had seven-figure expenses. And since the buy, apparently, in local channels here is not that expensive, you couldn't watch TV in this town during mm-hmm. the election without seeing, you know, some candidate walking on the beach with their dog.
Yes. So I haven't gone there yet.
Haven't gone there yet.
No. If I do, I'll have a teenager I know film it, and it'll go on my Facebook page.
So I have some notes here, and one of the things that's staring me in the face is, says you specialize in groundwater contamination.
I do.
And I don't understand how you can feel proud about contaminating the water.
No, okay. Oh, I specialize in...
I mean, that's shocking that someone.
Yeah, yeah, that would be different. But my original specialty in my research in geophysics back when I did that and worked for the USGS was in modeling groundwater contamination using ground penetrating radar, and that was so that to actually get the contamination out of the ground. So modeling how it flows, where it flows, and that, you know, part per billion can contaminate groundwater for thousands of years. And that's actually something, the knowledge of that, that informs a lot of my decisions about oil near our water sources or anything that could risk contaminating our water sources, especially our groundwater. Yes.
And the water, the desalination plant, how's that coming along? Is that...
Well, so desal is just a stopgap. I mean, it will supply about a third of our water supply. That water supply, it would be hugely expensive to move it uphill and to be treated up further up. So most of what it produces stays down in the flat part, and you know, pushing water uphill is very, very expensive. So, you know, a third of our use right now, I hear that it's online and working and providing water, but it's really, we can't rely on that to be our only source.
But as a scientist, is it safe?
To drink?
Yeah.
Oh, I believe it's safe to drink. Yeah. Yeah. It has a large carbon footprint, though. So it takes a lot of fossil fuels to run the desal plant. So I think the next step for that is to get it on solar or alternative energy, because we're contributing to the problem that creates the drought by running the desal plant. So that's something to think about, too.
And, you know, one of the things, everything's so interrelated, because if you don't have water, then you can't have more housing. If you can't have more housing, then you can't have a housing that's affordable for workers. Then you can't have businesses. Mm. So, you know, let's take a look at some of the issues that affect everyone, and,
yes,
and even if it's a subtle way of it affects everyone, and that is housing. You know, when I came here, everyone said housing's impossible. Housing's impossible. And then you watch Channel 17, or you watch the Goleta channel, and you see people saying, oh, no, it's too high, it's too dense, I don't want that in my neighborhood. How do you, you know, reconcile the need for housing, which everyone agrees is necessary to just to survive and have the number of employees you need to survive, and the desire among many of us that they want to keep the uniqueness of Santa Barbara the way it was?
Yeah.
How do you, it's almost an insolvable problem.
I think there are a lot of ways to approach this. We need housing options. I'm not a real big fan of high density and traffic congestion, but I am a big fan of the ADUs. Those are sometimes called granny flats, but I mean, people of all ages use them, and a lot of times it's the other way around. But at any rate, those units, now that they're being regulated by the state, which is, I mean, I don't like them when we have takeaway of local control, but there are so many units that already are existing, and so many people now, I mean, they're being flooded with applications to put on ADU units, and those would be on existing properties. It would be infilling while still maintaining the character, providing entry-level rental rates. They're not units to buy. I think I would like to see more entry-level units to buy. I think we need to stop having short-term rentals, because those are taking up housing stock. If it's your own home, I'm all for home sharing or renting out your own home long-term over the summer to make ends meet. But when a person or an entity buys several smaller properties and is renting those out solely as vacation rentals, then those aren't homes that are available to be rented by families or individuals.
Is that actually something that I haven't heard that be discussed that way? I thought that the restrictions were blanket. That is, you know, no short-term rentals. Period. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but that's one of the reasons why they made it that way. And I'm an advocate for home sharing, and I think there's some others on the city council who share that view, and that might be something that could be eased up on in that blanket regulation. I think it's, I mean, it just seems to me, I know so many professors, I know so many people who vacate their primary residence for the summer to rent it out and make ends meet. That's how they're affording their mortgage in Santa Barbara. So, and if it's your own home and, you know, one tenant out, one tenant in for a period of time, I'm okay with that. I think that's not the current policy right now, but in, and that doesn't affect housing stock either, right? That's a house, that's a primary residence. But
and so one of the things that the city council probably could do to help housing in a small way is to speed up the approval process.
Yes.
If you talk to anybody that's a builder or wants their home renovated, they it almost sounds like my New York stories about getting anything done. And I don't know whether there's not enough people or whether there's a people have a power trip when they're in that position, but you know, everyone's heard the stories.
Yeah. There aren't enough people right now. They're being inundated with these new permit asks. I would like to streamline the process of getting those ADUs, those accessory dwelling units, approved quicker. Right now, they're coupled in with having to update your primary residence, too. So if you bring in an accessory dwelling unit, then then you know the windows in your home might need to be updated also. And I don't see that those need to be coupled like that. I think we could grandfather in and get those existing units permitted and safe. I think a lot of electrical wiring in some of those, and they don't have actual kitchens. I think those could be upgraded, counted, permitted much more quickly than they are.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Actually, I heard of a friend of mine had that, and he started. He decided not to bother.
Yeah, that's not a you know, that's not a realistic option. If you go through this whole permitting process, it was expensive, time consuming, and then you have to upgrade your entire house when your whole point was that you wanted to make more housing and have an income.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it anyway because I'm afraid my kids will move back in with me. You're listening to our presents about education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coramar Drive in Goleta.
In 1962, Pierre Lafon founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here with Kristen Sneddon, candidate for Santa Barbara City College, excuse me, Santa Barbara City Council.
District 4.
District 4. So, infrastructure. Infrastructure is sort of a boring but absolutely critical problem for the whole country.
Yes.
Infrastructure is not just simply the fact that there are some potholes. There's some real serious infrastructure issues here.
Oh, yeah.
And that requires real capital. How do we deal with that?
Well, Measure C is on the ballot. It's interesting. The candidates all are asked whether we support it or not, and it'll be decided on the same ballot that we're decided on. So voters will decide. But Measure C will bring in $22 million a year approximately that could be spent toward rebuilding infrastructure. So the police station, that's one area. And, you know, when we repave roads, it's not just about the smooth ride. We also make them ADA compliant, make them safer, have bike lanes. There are a lot of different benefits to our whole transportation system that could also take into account, like if the freeway ever does get widened, the mitigations on the side streets to ease traffic congestion there. So, but infrastructure isn't just about roads. Another thing that I would like the city to be looking at is extending what's called the purple lines, the lines for recycled water and reclaimed water, so that we could be using those in home use for either flushing toilets or for watering our own lawns. Doesn't just have to be in public parks. So that's another, you know, infrastructure use. And another idea I have is that we really should have, and we could have pretty inexpensively, an early earthquake warning system. And they've already started trying that out a couple years ago. We just don't have enough seismometers in Santa Barbara. We have kind of a gap there. It wouldn't be difficult to do. So there are a lot of different things with infrastructure. It's such a big umbrella term, but we don't have enough funding right now to take care of the infrastructure needs.
I don't know what you're talking about. When I bought my house, my broker said that there are no earthquakes here.
She
said it was too expensive. So is this measure you're talking about is the 1% sales
it is,
tax?
Yeah.
So, there are unnamed candidates that oppose it. And
yes.
I guess the position is, which is typical of a lot of criticisms of any tax in Santa Barbara, is there's no guarantee it will be used for what they say it will be used.
And that's true.
So was it drafted poorly, or do you have more faith that it will be spent properly?
I actually think it was strategic not to have it too tethered to any one. It is in the general fund, but to any one project. If you earmark it just for the police station, and then we have a natural disaster or something where other parts of the infrastructure need to be rebuilt or take priority, then you lose that flexibility to spend those funds wisely toward infrastructure. So I think it was a little bit strategic not to have it too much earmarked. I think it does make it really important who you elect, whether you're electing someone you trust and who will manage those funds for the common good. You know, there isn't much of a slush fund there. It will go toward infrastructure in whatever capacity, but the police station's a priority.
So yeah. We've talked for almost an hour now on a micro basis, all the specific things that affect the city. On a macro basis, if you're elected and it's, you know, God willing, we're back here 20 years from now discussing your 3 terms in the city council and your 2 terms as mayor.
A fast calculation.
How is Santa Barbara going to be better?
We are going to manage our water so much better. We're going to look into energy resources, not just solar, but we also have wave possibly available, natural gas available. We're going to have different options for transportation while still keeping some of our old options that we still like. And it's just going to be a different place where we're not worried so much about, well, we're always going to have to worry about how much water we have, but we're going to be managing it really well. Just an overarching goal for the city is to preserve what we have, but to still modernize and to think before we're thinking about our future.
So how can people get in touch with you?
You can contact me on my website, sneddenforsantabarbara.com, or email me at sneddenforsantabarbara@gmail.com, or call me, 805-669-6189. I'd love to hear from you. Any ideas you have for the city or for the future, I'd really like to hear.
And even though this is a district election, mm-hmm. it's important for everyone to look at all of the candidates,
yes.
because it affects everyone who lives. And I live in the county, and I'm still mm-hmm. concerned about what the city does.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it's something
that... It's your water,
too. So again, if you don't live in Santa Barbara, you may be interested in helping you financially as well.
Yes.
And that can be done on the website as well.
Yes. Yes, there's a donate button there.
Kristen Sneddon, it was really nice talking to you.
You too. Thank you.
And good luck on the election.
Thank you.
You're listening and have been listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll be right back here next week at the same time.